And it's the Table Breakers, they've done it again. Is this the biggest panel we've ever had on, Jason?
One day you have a guy throwing mid-70s, and next week you have a guy throwing 55-mile fastballs.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Ball Caps and Bagpipes, a Scottish baseball podcast. I am your host, John McKellar, and I'm joined tonight by a very special guest co-host, teammate of mine on the Glasgow Comets, Danny Quinn. Thanks for joining the show, Danny.
Yeah, really good to be back on, John. Really looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, it's good to have you on in a slightly different capacity this evening. Jason Dare, my usual co-host, was hoping to make it on. He's currently exhausted from an amazing trip to the States that I'm sure he'll cover on the next episode. He went to the National in Chicago. He met some of the great artists that we spoke to during the Negro League fundraiser in 2020. So I'm sure he'll go into that in quite a bit of detail. Danny, we're joined by a very special guest this evening. It's a guy who's been a kind of a mainstay around Glasgow baseball in the last few years. He's dabbled in a couple of other fields as well in Scotland and, as we'll learn shortly, across the UK. It's Mr. John Linton. Thank you for joining the show, John.
Evening, guys. How you doing? Greetings from Aaron.
That's good, right, you. Yeah, John has very graciously given up some of his break over in Arran to join us on the show tonight. I'm looking forward to chatting with you shortly, John. But Danny, before we do, before we get into the interview, let's chat a wee bit about the scores from this past Sunday. We start with our Comets, actually. Two absolutely thrilling games in Glasgow. The Comets defeat the Galaxy 4-3 in AAA on a walk-off. Out in Edinburgh, the Cannons continued their absolute blitz in form with a 13-0 win over the Devils. Just untouchable so far this year, the Edinburgh Cannons. And the Breakers defeated the Aberdeen Oilers by a scoreline of 11-1. So you've got two semi-blowouts, but one absolute classic in that close AAA Glasgow game. The Glasgow derby in single A was even more nail-biting. It was a Comets 2 Galaxy 1 scoreline on, I think it was a fourth-inning walk-off.
It was really, really tense. The Galaxy have improved so much in their single A over the past, you know, since the season started. Their pitching's really good, their hitting's really good, their defense really good. So just a really good game of base. But I mean, it's horrible to be involved in when you want to win and you're sitting there on the sidelines. But as a spectator, I'd imagine it'd have been quite a good game of baseball to watch.
Now, you weren't there as a spectator, but you were there as the manager of the single A Comets. Before we go into sort of the next portion, while you're here, the Comets are in a really strong position. We'll get into the schedule for this Sunday and what that weekend could potentially mean for the Comets season. But how did you feel? Obviously, you won't be surprised by the grit shown by the Comets players. Like the guys that we've got on the field every week are so determined and have such a will to win that it's been outstanding to watch. But how did you feel when we finally pulled that out?
I mean, yeah, incredibly, just a lot of emotions going on. We went into the fourth inning and we knew that it was going to be the last inning. So we went in knowing that we had to keep Galaxy off the board. So, and we'd done that, and that was really hard to do to begin with, but it was only half the job. So then you're going into the bottom of the inning and it was the bottom of a lineup. So, you know, it's a lot of guys that haven't played for a full season, a lot of guys that don't have that experience, so you don't want to put too much pressure on people to come out with a win, but the guys just done an amazing job. You know, they battled, they got on base, they took their walks, and it ended up being a walk-off wild pitch, you know, reaching home in a wild pitch. So yeah, just an incredible end for us. Certainly it was an incredible end, a really good victory to take.
Now, it was just a few weeks ago in late June that the Comets won 21-5 over the Galaxy in a Glasgow derby in single A. Yeah. What do you think? Can you put your finger on what's changed for the Galaxy in terms of their resurgence recently?
Yeah, it's came down to pitching. They've really struggled with pitching through the season, and they've brought in people now that really have a good arm and can hit the zone and can keep it competitive. As well as that, it's just a natural progression. In Glasgow, you know, the Galaxy has made up of a lot of guys that haven't played last season. This is their first season. And Jake, to his credit, from the Galaxy, has started running scrimmage games on a Wednesday. So the guys that are hitting in the Galaxy are seeing live pitching 2-3 times a week, you know, and they've just naturally progressed as hitters. You just need to be, as a pitcher, you just need to be much more conscious around them and understand that, you know, they're not going to be intimidated from seeing a fastball the way they were back in April. So it comes from having a good few players in there that weren't there at the start of the season, as well as these guys have just put in the work in the Galaxy to develop, and it's really showing.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, Danny. Give me a hitter and give me a pitcher on the Galaxy that you've seen a massive progression in over the course of this season.
So Roy, for the pitching, has been incredible. So Roy previously played back when it was the Glasgow Stars. So back when he was playing baseball, and I don't mean to give him a wee jab there about age or anything like that, but back when I was playing youth baseball, Roy was playing in Glasgow. And he comes with a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. And he's just a cracking guy. He's a really good guy. And he's really difficult to hit in the single A. He's a really good standard of pitcher for the single A. So for pitching-wise, Roy has given him a new lease of life from the mound. Hitting-wise, I think I'd give a lot of credit to Kai in the Galaxy single A. Although he's... You know, he's new to the game, but he is just fast and he creates chaos on the bases. You know, we walked him a few weeks ago and ended up getting up to second base on us just with us not paying attention. So when you have somebody at the top of the order with a bit of speed that can create a bit of chaos, then it just makes that team a lot more dangerous. So, yeah.
Yeah, you've relied on Matt in that very position more than once.
Yeah, Matt's an incredible player for us, and you know he had a couple of big moments at the weekend. So in the Triple A and Single A, so he's been amazing for us at the Single A. Matt is such, you know, a core part of that winning formula, and what he does, his attitude, his base running, his hitting, everything. You know, just his flexibility, he plays all over the field. So it's just an incredible asset to have in the team.
Brilliant. So we've got a couple of comments here. Stephen Loudon says, no Yankees shirt, John. No, I hate the New York Yankees. plus it's football season. You know, I'm wearing my football shirt now. Roberto Carlos says, comments and scrimmage games help you a lot. They help a lot on first base development. So that's interesting. Thanks for the comments, guys. If you have any further comments, please do fire them in. And if you've got any questions for John, please do pop them in the comments as well. See Kelly Elliott says, Yankees suck. Except you. You can fuck off. Where's the timeout button? Thanks for joining us, Chris. Let's move on to our interview portion. We are, of course, as I said, joined by John Linton, photographer. John, why don't you start off by giving the viewers and listeners a bit of background on who you are, where you come from, and how you got started in photography? Because I know that photographing Sunday League baseball isn't your main gig. Talk us through that a wee bit.
It's becoming more and more my main gig, to be honest. it feels that way. Yeah, so I'm, as you said, I'm a photographer. I'm from Glasgow. And it's been so long ago. You wanted to talk about when I started, why I started getting into photography. It was 2003 when I started photography. So that's a long time ago to sort of think back to. But what sort of brings back to me is that at the time I was in my mid-20s. I'd sort of wasted a lot of my early years just enjoying myself and partying, and all the stuff I experienced at that age has sort of followed me through my career and the things that I've been interested in photographing and my personal projects. So I really wanted to do something creative when I was young, and I didn't really have any role models in that. I didn't have any real confidence to sort of do that sort of thing. So I think it's sort of an interest of mine to find out how you can help guys that are at that age, 17, 18, 19, try to work out what to do in the world, and how you can help focus all that energy they've got and push through that difficult time when you're, you know, because that all that energy can go to a really good place or it can go to a really bad place. So that's kind of that, to get everything into one answer. That's how I started photography. It was really, really, it was really good for me. I needed something, and I found photography. I needed to work really quickly because I was in the middle of my 20s. I needed to try and get working really quickly. So I started working for a newspaper agency, and it was kind of thrown in at the deep end, covering, I think in my first day, I had to go and cover a lift shaft where someone had fallen down and died in a hotel. And then the next day I was at Haddington Court chasing Neds about with, you know, no idea this is what I was letting myself in for. But it was a brilliant education. You know, obviously, I went in going, I'm going to be a photographer and wear cravats and smoke with a big cigarette holder and all that sort of stuff. And then I end up chasing meds about in Haddon Court. And, you know, it was really, really, couldn't have been a better grounding. It took all that nonsense out of my head and made me realise it was a job and it was a tool that you could do something really useful with. And that's where I kind of cut my teeth, was working for all the newspapers of Scotland, which includes all the best and the absolute worst, unfortunately, and UK and beyond. So that did me through the first sort of 5 to 10 years of my career. And then newspapers, that sort of all died a death, making a good living out of that died a death. And I wanted to explore other things anyway. So now, through several years of getting corporate clients, I work for various clients, doing sort of marketing work and communications work with them, trying to, you know, go do anything from recruit new apprentices through to just be making people feel good about the place that they work in, through to one of my big clients is BAE Systems, where I photograph down at the shipyards, and if they've built a new ship or a new part of the ship, I'll time-lapse it, I'll video it, I'll photograph it. And at the same time, I'll do the really personal stuff. I'll document the workforce and you know, help them with recruitment campaigns and that sort of stuff. So it's kind of like a big field. And because I'm doing a lot of that stuff for work, I really need a personal project that I can work on my own. And, you know, I found that in baseball. I put up at Toe Cross, and that was in 2019, and I keep coming back. Something good's happening there.
It sounds like it's been, from a very early point, very much a job rather than a passion. Do you have a passion for photography?
Absolutely. I've got a passion for photography as a tool of communication, and before I did photography as a job, what I studied at university was English and History of Art. So I was always interested in the sort of creative side of things and the visual arts as well. So I'm not trying to claim it's a great visual art. You know, you're going out and taking photographs in order to convey a message. And I really see all these things as tools. And it gets quite frustrating when you see people sort of try to make out that it's more than it is, and also less than it is. You know, it's brilliant if it's used the right way.
Absolutely, yeah. You made me look semi-presentable once, so I mean, that goes to show. Do you have any particular influences that have influenced the style of photography that you tend to gravitate toward?
Well, I was obsessed with street photography for a long time when I was learning. And there's a photographer called Joel Mirovich, who was a New York street photographer in the 50s. And then he did a lot of work in Cape Cod. And he evolved and he changed with time. And the thing that I really loved about his work was he would shoot loads and loads and loads, and then go back and find things they maybe didn't notice at the time of shooting. And unfortunately, that means that I have kind of emulated that to an extent, and now I'm left with massive edits. And the better you get, the better, the more pictures you've got to edit through. And yeah, it's kind of, I'm going to have to discipline myself to shoot less. because it means that I'm doing all these games and then work is taking over. I'm editing them, and the baseball sometimes has to wait. But the goal is hopefully to get a big exhibition at some point, or a book or something that we can put all this stuff together onto, so that people can see it. I promise I'm not just taking these pictures and hiding them away in a hard drive for your never again.
Let's talk about. Do you want to cut in there, Danny?
Yeah, no, it's just interesting. Obviously you've spoken about doing it for a long time, John, and it's somewhat of a creative myself, I will say. When you're doing stuff for a lot of people and you're getting paid to do it, and it does start to feel like a job, and you've kind of touched upon this already. And I guess as a kind of two-pronged question, but just really interested to find out how you keep it interesting for yourself. And obviously you've kind of touched upon baseball being, keeping that interest in your little side hobby and something that sort of reignites that sort of passion. But I guess the question within that is how does baseball keep it interesting? If you capture one baseball game, what's so different about capturing another one? What is it that keeps you coming back to sort of baseball, if that makes sense?
That's a great question. It's a great question. And if I knew the answer to it, I could probably go home, make myself a cup of Horlicks and just go to bed. And that'd be me never coming back again. That's kind of like the drive, is to discover what it is I wanted to make in the first place. And to, I'll take a picture and I'll see something in it that I think that's an area that I should explore more. Because what I'm really doing is I'm documenting what goes on there, and you can do that by turning up with a camera and just going, well, there's Danny, I'll photograph him, like kind of like what I did at the start before I got to know people. But you kind of have to get under the skin of it a little bit and start to say, well, this is interesting. There's a group over here that are doing it like this, and these guys maybe meet up and go to the pub afterwards, and what does that show you about them? I mean, there's some guys that when you see them on the mound, they're like totally different beasts from when you see them in the pub. Sometimes like totally, shy, quiet, unassuming guys, and then you take a photograph of them and there's this real grimace of sort of, aggression and anger and everything just going focusing in at that 1 second. So it's always about getting better for me, and it's a bit of an obsession, and it's not always that healthy, but it's literally always about seeing something and going, well, that kind of worked, let's see if I can make it properly work this time. So I think that's kind of what where the drive comes from.
I guess what you're doing often, and I've kind of noticed it too through the likes of you capturing the sunflowers and that, is painting that story for people that might not know about it. So obviously you bring a good level of exposure, just bringing baseball into your sort of world and the people, your contacts and your connections. But it's really good to see, and this isn't a question, it's just an observation, I guess, but it's really good to see that it isn't just a case of there was a baseball game played until crossing Sunday, but it is actually about telling a wee bit about the story of the club or the people involved. So yeah, it's huge props to you for that.
Cheers, Danny. Cheers. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely something I'm trying to do, and it's such a big story that I think about it and I go, well, I've no idea. It's just me doing this. I don't know how to do this, but that's what keeps me coming back. And I have adapted in my head slightly this year. When I went to the AGM this year for Glasgow, I realised that everyone there is got jobs. They've all got hard jobs. They're all doing things in their spare time. But every one of them's dedicating some of their own time to doing something for the club. And I've been made to feel really welcome at the club. And felt like, apart from what I was getting out of it photographically, I would like to try and get more interest in it through whatever I know how to do, which is photography. Because we touched on this before we came on, that it's important to make it sustainable, I think. so that the club can they can evolve and grow. Not necessarily to become big professional, you know, sports teams, but to just be there so that the young people coming through. There's never been, I've never seen as many people interested in baseball. It's amazing. This last couple of years, I hope it just keeps continuing. And I'm just seeing good things happening in the Glasgow team and at the Scotland level as well to keep pushing forward and building structures and hopefully, you know, get a little league and all these sort of things that are needed in order so that people coming through know where to go to play baseball if they want to try.
Yeah.
So, John, how did your time photographing Scottish baseball begin? What put Scottish baseball on your radar initially?
Right, well, it was a wee perfect storm of things. I was looking for I'd been doing some various other projects before, but I was looking for a new one. I really wanted to do something around teamwork. And at the same time, I went to America on holiday for my girlfriend's birthday. And she wanted to go to... She used to go on holiday when she was younger to Boston and Cape Cod. And I didn't have a clue what to expect when I went there. And there's all these places. I like my music, so I was thinking, yeah, we'll go to America, we'll go to the Deep South, we'll sort of explore the blues or something. She's like, no, it's my birthday. We're going to Boston. And I was like, right, okay, well, we'll go to Boston. And the first I heard of it was the guy in the travel agency saying, oh, I should go and go to a game of baseball. Obviously, I knew about baseball, but I hadn't really, you know, I loved seeing it in films and stuff like that, but I didn't have a clue what the rules were or how it all worked. Still don't really, to be honest with you. They don't tell anyone. But so
neither,
we went
neither
to
they
Boston.
Have the league, mate.
What's that?
Neither they have the league, to be honest.
That's one of the unique. so we got to Boston and I said to the guy at the hotel, what do we do here? And he went, go and take that trolley bus and they'll show you the city. And it was good. You know, we were having a nice, it was sunny and it was a lovely, lovely day. And then we drove past Fenway and my jaw just hit my, you know, I was just looking at this thing, salivating, going, what is this? It's like, you know, like the funkiest bit of the Barrowlands, like that's like two lanes or something like that.
Benchton.
Yeah. Maybe that's where there could be a baseball diamond.
I don't think that would last 5 minutes in Bridgeton.
But it looked amazing, you know. And I said, we'd bought tickets. By that time, we'd already bought tickets to go to a game. We went to a game, but the thing that really did it wasn't Fenway, which was amazing. But the Red Sox lost that night to the Twins. But anyway. it was the Cape Cod League was the thing, because it was just on every night. We were staying in Chatham for part of it, and the Chatham Anglers play there in Cape Cod. It's a wooden bat league where guys going into college go there and they stay in someone's house for the duration. I think it's like a 9-week league or something like that. I've probably got that wrong. But, you know, it's the duration of the summer period. And they totally integrate into the community. Some of them get jobs. Some of them, you know, help out teaching kids baseball. And there's like a game every night or so, you know, pretty much every night. It's all open air. It's all free. It's all, you know, it's classic Americana. It's just amazing. You go along, you just hear the sound of the ball on the wooden bats and the announcer, and it's got floodlights and a wee bit of mist comes in from the sea. And people are just doing that every night of their holidays. And it just felt like a really nice community hub and something that we just don't have in Scotland in the same way, which is a question I sort of asked loads of people. I mean, it's something I'll ask you guys. Why do you think baseball finds it so hard to take off in the UK? Why is it never?
That's a really good question. I think it's odd, especially because from a very young age in the UK, you play things like rounders, in primary and in high school. Like, so you do play a form of a very similar game to baseball pretty much from such a young age. I just think it's because of the sheer prevalence of football in the UK. And I think maybe a bit of a reluctance to embrace anything that isn't in its essence British, like football is. You know, I think that's why rugby is a bigger sport here. Cricket is a bigger sport here. I think across Britain, in much the same way as they do in North America, there's very much a focus on British sport. You know, there's a pride in being where football was created. There's a pride in being where cricket and rugby came from. I think that it's more that causes like maybe less known sports here to really take off.
I think historically in the early 1900s when they were really pushing baseball and it was sort of forming and things, there were, I forget the names, I'm going to butcher this, but there were people that came over that tried to push the sport at an international level, and they came over to England and they you know, people in England were saying, you know, we've kind of got rounders and we see it as the more predominant, prevalent, better sport, and we've got cricket and things like that. And I think it's a wee bit of that sort of empirical arrogance that we've got it, we're okay, we do things right over here, we don't need any of your stuff. Also, I just think that we became so accustomed to fast-paced sports. So football's fairly fast-paced and, you know, it's a time sport, and rugby, and there seems to be that continuous action. Baseball, what I love about it and what a lot of people love about it is when it looks like nothing's happening, there's actually a lot happening. You know, there's the battle between the pitcher and the batter and things like that. It's all the little intricacies of the game that make it really, really interesting for me and probably for all of us here. But we are very much a minority in that. You know, I try and speak to my wife about this. I'm like, he threw a slider there and he should never have thrown it. That was the worst kind of pitch you could have thrown. And she's just like, very good, go to bed. It's 2 a.m. in the morning. So, yeah, I think we're just wired a wee bit differently, like in baseball over here, you know.
Yeah, my girlfriend knows who Derek Jeter is, she knows who Giancarlo Stanton is, but that's it. She has zero interest in hearing anything else.
If your girlfriend didn't know who Derek Jeter was or Giancarlo Stanton, I don't think you'd be with someone that wouldn't have those names in their
that's
head
very
somewhere.
True. It's funny because she lived in New York for like the better part of a decade, and I don't think she ever actually saw or heard of Derek Jeter until I mentioned him, and she was like, that name rings a bell, and then I showed her a picture, and she was like, "Oh yeah, he kind of looks familiar." But yeah, I hope that's answered your question somewhat satisfactorily there, John.
It was a question I asked loads of people at the start. I was asking everybody that question. I thought they would see the weather, but like, you know, John Tafe was saying, they play baseball in Seattle. They play baseball in places with terrible weather in America, and it still happens. So, who knows?
What I wanted to ask you was, do you have a favourite image that you've captured of Scottish baseball so far?
Yeah, I thought you'd ask this, and I thought, did I actually give you one of the sidestep? Go for a cheeky, they change every week. Well, they kind of do change all the time because I'm, you know, like I say, I'll take something and then I'll think, I really, really like that picture, but it's not a great picture. It's what the potential it shows that I can get out of it. But funnily enough, talking about the weather, there was one day when the heavens totally opened and I turned up just as everyone was beginning to shelter under some trees, and it properly opened up. Danny, you remember this?
Yeah.
It properly opened up, and then James Sehar and V. Calvin were there. And the thing that I always regret about this, and this is just annoying perfectionism, is that I didn't get the picture that happened 2 seconds before the picture I got. And that was Jim picked up Calvin and threw him into the Keedwell van, you know, the van that he goes in. Because everyone was there. We Ali's running to the car, the rain's coming down the stair road. And Jim's there, and he's trying to get himself in the car next. and he's got a fag sticking out of his mouth. It's totally drenched through. But it says so much about the characters and how far people will take it to go out and get a game of baseball. So I think that's the one that sticks in my mind. There was a couple of shots that day that I really liked. And there's a big picture of Big Luis standing there in the rain. Just his expression just says it for me. You know, he's like, "What can you do? What can you do? It's baseball in Scotland."
This is very true. Now, John, this obviously started as kind of a project. Do you foresee yourself sticking with this on a regular basis moving forward? Do you think that this is something you're going to do every year? Or do you have an endpoint that you're looking at of that project's going to end at this time and then I'm going to move on to something else?
I do see it having an endpoint at some point because it does sort of obsessively take up a lot of my thoughts, just how it's all going, where it's all going to go, how like Danny said, how I can go this week and get a picture that I don't think I've got so far, and probably when at the time when I turn up and I do a few games in a row and I just think I can't get anything else out of this. But that's not to say that I won't hang around in some other capacity or just stay around to do some pictures for teams when they're starting out. What I'd like to do is help anybody else that's interested in taking pictures to sort of learn a bit about that and, create a bit of a pool of guys in Scotland that can be photographing from games. There's quite a lot of good photography going on at the games already. You know, Craigie takes some amazing pictures.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's playing half the time. There's some stuff comes out of Tayport, Aberdeen, Edinburgh. Ruben in Edinburgh is doing some great stuff. So, there's some brilliant stuff already. But it'd be good to have a sort of consistent. If anybody was interested in that, I'd be happily give them a helping hand and tell them how to start off with that.
John, you kind of speak a lot about the other people when you're talking and taking pictures for the players for them to have. And I remember one of the first times I met you, and you handed me a picture of I think it was me swinging in the sunset at Toll Cross. It was a really cool picture. I'll try and find it.
I love that photo.
Yeah, that's another one that's a standout for me.
The sunset, and I'm just kind of like a black outline. I look like a child, a 5'4" muscular child. You speak about...
You captured his essence.
Yeah, exactly. You speak about maybe wanting to help people, and you speak about, what you give the players and, potential exit. You mentioned a potential exhibition. I guess, and as this is where I'm kind of getting in the creative mindset a wee bit, but I'm thinking, is your motivation or is part mostly your motivation to offer this to other people to say, this is for you and this is what I captured? And, because we all get a wee bit of, a sense of well-being from giving stuff to other people. But I feel like a lot of the time with the creative arts, be it photography, be it music, there's a certain level of selfishness. And I use that word probably not in the right way, but that you get a lot out of doing it too. And if even, no one else was interested in, your photography, you'd probably still be doing it for you. Does that make sense to you? Is there an element of well-being that you get from it for you with photography?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, when I'm doing something like this, I'm terrified my massive raging ego is going to come flying out the speakers that I'm doing. Of course, yeah, I've got to, you've got to have a level of... ego to have a johnlinton.co.uk sort of website and call your business after your name and all that. But I think that's kind of two sides of the same coin, exactly what you're talking about. There is a lot that you get back. I've got to appreciate, I do believe that if you just go in with a sort of really mean spirit and try and take things for yourself, and not give back. Again, it's quite selfish in its own way. It's just not going to be successful. It's just not going to work because you're just going to go in. People will be closed to you. You're not going to see things because you're not opening up to people. So, yeah, it's two sides of the same coin, absolutely. I believe that there should be a lot of... I mean, you guys are all doing what you do to a great level, and I have to feel gratitude, and I have to remind myself to feel gratitude that, you know, you guys allow me to come along and do that. And sometimes, that's part of my compensation almost, is that I want to make sure you guys are getting something, so I'll give you pictures. And it was only really at the start of this year, like I said, that I thought, well, actually, instead of it being about me giving you guys something, I feel so much part of what's going on here that I'm sort of invested in building it myself as well, for everyone, because I'd love to be part of something that grew like that. So I don't think anything good comes unless you're accepting that. Yeah, I've got selfish motives, but everyone can benefit from that.
I feel like I should clarify, because I was speaking a bit fast and trying to get my words around my thoughts. When I spoke about swinging in the sunset, just for a listener, or hopefully listeners, I specifically meant swinging a baseball bat in the sun, because I know there's different things that could mean. You take a picture of me swinging in the sunset, so just what I say, I was swinging a baseball bat in the sunset.
That's those other pictures we did, Danny. That's
just a private project. We'll talk later. I've got money.
Danny does not go swinging.
No, none of that.
He goes dogging. John, have you ever been tempted to feature on the other side of the camera? Have you ever thought about playing?
Gordon very kindly once threw me a pitch and my nephews were there, so I had to hit it, which I did. I don't know where it went, but you know, he was being kind on me and threw it softly. But no, I think it did cross my mind, and it looks great. But you know, I'm 49, and I know that you can start anything at any time in life. But I would just get obsessed with trying to be good at something else way too late to get to the level I'd like to get at. And the other thing is, I genuinely would. I don't want to distract from what I'm doing. If I turn up and I start playing and I start enjoying myself too much, I'll end up just turning up and doing that and going, I forget about the pictures, this is much more fun. Yeah. So,
All right, I want to move on to two particular events before we wrap things up. Before we do, we've got quite a few comments here. So the first one here is a question from Paul. Now, you might have already hinted at the answer to this. Paul Convoy says, great to see you on the podcast, John. Something I didn't ask you in the 18 hours in the car we had last week. We're going to get into that in a minute. Do you have an MLB team that you follow? Now, I will warn you here. Your answer could be booed out of the stream.
yeah, I guess that. Well, you know, if I was to pick a New York team, it would be the Mets, but...
Fair enough.
No, I went to Fenway for the first time, and you know, I'm only getting my head now around the idea of maybe buying a hat from someone else, because I felt kind of like you have to stick with them for a while, but now they're losing and they're rubbish, so sorry.
Andrew Sweeney has a question for you. When's the story of the inflatable sofa through the years going to be published?
I feel like there's the sort of the big picture for that hasn't happened yet, and it may well be related to Danny's comments earlier about swinging.
I mean, I think first off, we probably should give some context to people watching or listening who don't know what that's all about.
I don't think we put any context in this, John. We are out here swinging, and people are just need to deal with it, man.
Are we just leaving that? Right, okay. Ross Marnie says, great to see John on. What a guy. See Alexander, yeah, he's mentioned the beautiful Scottish summer. So I think that's going back to reasons that the game hasn't taken off. Paul Convoy says, for me, John, I love that you capture the people of the game here and show the true passion we all have for what we do. I love the 16-plus hours in the car just chatting about everything and anything, and that celebration of the Scotland team you captured was pure magic. So that's from Paul Convoy, the president of Baseball Scotland.
I had a great team in the car.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounded like everybody had a great weekend, and we're going to cover that just shortly. I'm teasing this relentlessly, but Roberto Carlos says, age is not a limit. Come to the comments. Danny is a good coach, to be honest.
I was just about to tell you I would bench Roberto for you, John, but I'm going to make it up back now.
There's a wee single tear in his eye, look. He goes like that. I've told you this, Roberto. Don't. He goes like that. See Kelly edits. Chris Kelly says, let's fucking go, Betts. Always knew I liked you, John. He's one pro Mets comment or one Yankees comment away for a timeout, if I can ever figure out how to do it. So, John, a couple of big events just this year that you've been part of. I want to start with the first one, the inaugural ball game of the Glasgow Sunflowers.
Yeah.
You photographed the day. Tell me about that experience. That was quite a historic day. Some turnout. You did a fantastic job, I think, capturing that. Tell me about your experience of photographing that event.
First of all, I think that's one of the ones that's still sitting in my hard drive mostly, and people have seen some of the shots from it, and there will be an edit coming at some point. So it was amazing, and I've so really enjoyed seeing the Sunflowers build the team, basically. There's just so many good things can come out of it. And it's also really refreshing to be just seeing different people coming together from different communities, and it not turning into a big slanging match, and it not being like, oh, we're all part of the culture wars and everything. It's just like people accepting life, and it's brilliant. It's really, really good. It's been really a real pleasure to photograph, and I'm sadly not been down often enough, really, to get to know the team as well as I've got to know you guys. So that's on my radar to try and do more of this year. But that was a great game, and the Leicester Diamonds were very funny. I enjoyed their spirit loads. And what was great was seeing the development between the Sunflowers at that game to the next game, because I think they had that initial game of, oh shit, we've got to do this. You know, we've got to stand here and people are watching, and we've brought all our friends and it's good, but we've now got to perform. And you could just see the little level gone up for when they did the tournament up at Toll Cross. So yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And there's so many people there that you suddenly get your pictures from a photography point of view. Pictures are just full of people and emotion and constant cheering. So it's brilliant, brilliant.
And the other major event that you went to was just last week. It was the British Baseball Cup down at Farnham Park. First off, tell me about your first impressions of Farnham Park. That facility is kind of legendary across the UK baseball community. I don't think either Danny or I have ever been down. Tell me about your first impressions of Farnham, first off.
That was great to go there and to be. Paul gave me a Baseball Scotland T-shirt to wear and represent, walking around there and talk to people. You just walk in the place, drive in the place, and you know, you're seeing massive backstops. And as Ewan, I don't know his second name, sorry, Ewan the scorer from Edinburgh. I don't know if you've
Ewan met Spence.
Him.
Yeah,
Ewan Spence.
Good guy.
He was a brilliant guy. We went down in the car together as well. And he wanted a picture because he just that took in the whole view, because he just wanted to say it's baseball as far as the eye can see. It's just stunning. And when you've got so many hundreds of players, loads of teams, and it's full. In fact, the only thing is that everybody that I spoke to said it just doesn't get used often enough. But it's a bit of a jaunt, unfortunately. We need something like that up here.
Yeah, you and Paul have alluded to 16, 18 hours in the car. tell us more generally about the weekend. What was your routine over the course of the weekend? And were you there the whole weekend, weren't you, with the team?
Yes, I was. I went down with Paul on Friday and came back up on Monday. Ended up getting in at something like 10:30 after we got stuck in traffic on the way home. So we had lots to talk about, from the characters I'd photographed to various sewers around Glasgow, and around Scotland, which for other reasons, because that really is the polls work. Okay. So I was getting up with the team, and we were actually going in early so that we could go in and speak to the officials and all that before we got started, and meet as many people as possible and take as many pictures as possible. But most of the time was spent just photographing the Scotland team when they were playing. And when we got there into the first game, which was Essex, wasn't it? No, Liverpool was the first game. And we went into it was field two, which is amazing. It's an amazing field. There's dugouts, and just like the whole thing looks like a proper diamond. And I have looked at so many photographs since I started this, so many baseball photographs. There's people that I want to give a shout out to, like, that are great baseball photographers, if you're interested in looking up other people's work. Jean Fruth from Grassroots Baseball in America, she was the Cooperstown photographer and has gone on to do a project worldwide about grassroots baseball. And she's been hugely influential from that point of view. The Red Sox photographer, Billy Weiss, you know, sometimes I'll see something they've done and it's got, like, you know, dugouts and the lighting of the fence and the chain link fence and all the things that you expect to see. And I got into the dugout with the guys and just suddenly pinched myself and said, stop worrying about what the pictures are going to be, because you've only really got 2 hours to enjoy this and enjoy it. And it was just amazing. It got really rainy on the first day. I loved it.
I mean, you spoke to us, John, about that, you know, how emotional that first game was, because we had the walk-off win. It was kind of, you know, I wasn't there, but you said it was almost unexpected to turn that around, that come-from-behind victory. Can you just describe sort of what was going through your head? You're trying to capture that. What was going through your head at that time as the run came across?
Yeah, well, it was there was a time limit on the game, so if they didn't get the runs, and all the runs, they put in all the runs in the last inning, really. And they could have drawn that game by just swinging for everything and getting put out, because I think the time was down to something like 2 minutes. It was under 2 minutes when Miguel went up to the plate. And I was genuinely standing next to Paul saying, get them to swing at everything for fuck's sake. And Paul, Paul, he gave him his due, and I learned a good lesson that day. Paul turned around and said, I'd rather they lost swinging, I'd rather they lost going for a win rather than drew like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was literally, the first thing that went through my head was like, is that it? Do you get a walk-off if it's a time, if there's a time, time game? And then suddenly realised, well, the players know what's going on, so I turned the camera on them, and it was just pandemonium. It was brilliant. It was bedlam. They were so happy, because it was literally down to the wire. If they hadn't got that hit, all those runs would have been rolled back, and they'd have just lost the game. So, and it was looking pretty, you know, but fair play to everybody for keeping hope alive and pushing it through. It really gave a good, it gave good momentum to the weekend, because unfortunately the second game was rained off and it turned into a bit of a knockout match and a knockout tournament. And because Scotland had won that game, they were essentially playing for a place the next day. So it gave us something to look forward to. It gave us fun in the pub that night, although I just went to the meal and then, as an old guy, went back to my bed and let those guys go.
Well, you've done the sensible thing, John. You don't hang about there, bad influence down at their Baseball Scotland.
Exactly. Those days are long behind me, Danny.
John, I have. I guess we're coming kind of to the end of this, and I've one last question that has very little to do with photography whatsoever. But as pod, you know, we sometimes need to ask difficult questions and inappropriate question, not so much inappropriate. Just a wee observation I've had, right, is that obviously you're John Linton and we're joined by John McKellar. And in Glasgow, we had John Tafe running the Galaxy and John Nelson used to run the Comets. And even if you take all the Johns out, you then need to move on to the Jasons because you've got Jason Dare and you've got Jason Stott and you've got Jason West. And it just seems that Baseball Scotland is so heavily dominated by Johns and Jasons. And I just, have you guys got a group chat or is there an email or is it down to like just purely, you know, institutionalised, hard-earned favouritism that runs through the veins of Baseball Scotland? What do you think? For all the Johns and Jasons that end up playing baseball in Scotland?
If that were the case, Danny, he wouldn't tell you.
Yeah, Danny, if you don't know the answer to that, then that's you. Yeah, we'll just leave it there, because if you don't know about the secret group, then that's we're fine as we are.
Fair enough.
All right. So, do you have any? Do you have any intention of like potentially photographing non-Glasgow games? I don't know how much of that you've actually done in the past so far, but would you travel?
Yeah. So, like the first year I did it in 2019, I went up to Aberdeen once, and I went to see Jason and Tayport before they'd set up the field. And I really need to get up to Tayport. I'm dying to get up to Tayport. It's just the way things have worked out. And I'd love to get back up to Aberdeen again. And I hear there's changes afoot. So it's important to me to make sure I get more time.
Yeah.
At those. But with the way things are, I'll probably go up with a Glasgow team. Just so that I'm getting more pictures of your beautiful baseballing faces.
We're going to start wrapping things up because we have kind of gone over the usual time. But we have a few more comments. The first one being another Chris Kelly dig. You'll find out the timeout before the Yankees figure out how to get back to the World Series. But see what we have to put up with as Yankee fans.
That's not doing it.
Andrew Sweeney says the away leg between the Diamonds and the Sunflowers, that's happening on the 12th of August, and he's asking if you're free. Is it in Leicester?
Possibly. I need to check that. I'm not going to commit to anything right now because I've got a lot of goodwill to buy from Fiona for disappearing.
Smart man.
Craigie from the Comets says, great to have the podcast back 1 year. Andrew Sweeney says, the Andes are coming for the Johns and Jasons.
That's a fair point.
Jason West says, it's the J. Illuminati. Brilliant. John, next world domination, says Roberto Carlos. That escalated pretty quickly, didn't it? Welcome over to Tayport anytime, Chief, says Jason West. I think that's a great place to end it. I think that just kind of encapsulates how much you actually have come to mean to Scottish baseball, John. I think the work that you've done is phenomenal. You've kind of admitted earlier to maybe having a slightly selfish motive. I think anybody who's creative anyway always does it first and foremost for themselves. I think if you're not doing it first and foremost for yourself, you're doing it for the wrong reasons anyway, regardless whether it's music or photography or any other type of art. But the eyes that you've already put on Scottish baseball, some of the amazing moments that you've managed to capture and sort of freeze for us all to go back and enjoy any time that we want, you can't put a price on that. And I think it's something that I hope that you continue to do. But regardless of what capacity you stick around in, I hope you're going to be around again for a long time to come, because you've been an excellent addition to the Baseball Scotland family. Thank you so very much for joining us tonight. I'm going to let you go to bed and I'm going to let you enjoy the rest of your time in Ireland. Before we go, Danny, let's look at the schedule for this coming Sunday. It's the 6th of August and it's a massive one. This Sunday in Triple Eight, the Devils go to Aberdeen. They face the Oilers. A couple of teams that have struggled quite a bit this year, so it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top of that one. The Comets visit the absolutely untouchable Cannons in Triple A. They have been blowing everyone away all season. That's going to be a really tough game for both sides, though. The Comets are always capable of showing up and spoiling anybody's party. The Cannons will look very much like they are going to storm their way to that Scottish Championship this year. The question, I think, at this point is, can they do it undefeated? Danny, I know you're biased. Do you think they can do it undefeated, though?
I think they've got good a chance as any. I said to Rory at the All-Star game, they've got loads of arms in their club, and it's just a winning recipe. If you've got, you know, you get through Kit and you need to face, you know, Freddie, you need to face Peter, they're just really good ball players over there. So they get good a chance as anyone to do that.
Aye, and the Galaxy, they go up to Tayport for a game against the Breakers in Triple A. The Galaxy, like we've seen, they've actually been really good, I think, in Triple A this year. They've definitely seen a lot of improvement over last season in Triple A. The single A side is also improving. It looks like the Galaxy are back on the ascendancy after a wee bit of a period of rebuilding after the departure of a couple of key guys. Single A is the crucial one for the Comets this week, because it's a chance potentially for the Comets to win a first ever league title in the single A game. You're going to be there managing. Talk about your team's game at the Edinburgh Knights.
Yeah, it's going to. The Edinburgh Knights are always a tough competitor, you know. So we just, the way we are looking at it, as you'll know, John, is taking it game by game, inning by inning, and we do that, and you know, hopefully the big picture will unfold, but first and foremost, we need to win a game, and that's going to be tough as it is. So we'll go in there with our best team possible and give Edinburgh the respect they deserve. They can take their game off anyone in the single A. So, yeah, going to be a tough game. Yeah,
for sure. It's a full slate of single A. The Galaxy will also face the Breakers earlier in the day in a single A game as well. The Breakers have been the key sort of chaser for the Comets this year. They're going to be a tough proposition for the Galaxy, but like we've already covered, Galaxy, they have improved so much over the course of the year, so that could be an excellent game.
Yeah, I think it will be. I think for the whole weekend, I think Triple A and Single A, that's going to be the games of the weekend. It'll just be two really tight games, really, you know, dedicated and talented ball players on both sides, so if I was going to look for a game to watch this weekend, you know, I'd get myself out to Tayport and watch that.
Brilliant. So we'll wrap it up, guys. Please do follow Ball Caps and Bagpipes on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. It's at Caps and Pipes on both Facebook and Twitter, or X, or whatever the fuck Elon Musk is calling it these days. And it's Ball Caps and Bagpipes on Instagram. Hit follow on YouTube and Twitch as well. Please do visit the Baseball Scotland store at baseballscotlandshop.com for Baseball Scotland and Ball Caps and Bagpipes merchandise. Jason Dare, I'm sure, will be back for the next episode. Thank you so very much for co-hosting tonight, Danny. It's been wonderful. Another great episode. And again, John, thanks so much for being such a great guest. I'm sure that Jason will have you on again in the future once all this baseball photography is all said and done for you, to have a chat about the totality of it.
Do you have anything you want to plug, John L, I should say, like website, anything like that, where people can check you out?
Go to John Linton Photo on Instagram. That's what I tend to update the most. I've stuck a few pictures up in the story just now that I'll put into a favourite thing that's for Ball Caps and Bagpipes. I thought it was a good selection. But yeah, go there and then you can see the website from there and everything. So, but thanks very much, Danny. And thanks for having me on, guys. I really, really appreciate it.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to everybody for joining us. We'll be back soonish. We'll have a couple more by the end of the year. But that's all for tonight. Bobby Bonilla.